Well, please open your Bibles with me again to the passage we read a few moments ago, Luke chapter 16. And this evening we're going to consider verses 1 through to 13. Luke 16 and verses 1 through to 13. So let's begin with a question, which I hope is going to come up on the overhead. Thanks, brother. Lovely. One more, I think. Good man. Thank you. How good are we at thinking ahead? How good are we at thinking ahead? Sometimes we're really good at thinking ahead. We're really on the pulse of life. We're in our car. We see a sign that warns us of traffic lights and a four-way crossing at 200 metres down the road. And immediately, we check our mirrors, we come off the gas, we're looking around in our peripheral for other hazards, we're preparing to stop, we're searching for lights that may be changing from green to red. We're thinking ahead as we're driving our car down the road. Or how about professional sports men and women. Men and women who have the ability to set the match that they're in by thinking ahead, making decisions to gain the advantage in the game or the match that they're in. Sometimes those decisions can take place in milliseconds. And then on a different level, maybe a small insight to flat 6A on North Parade. Maybe we can start to think ahead by reading our class timetable in the evening. Maybe we can. We read our timetable. This helps us pack our bag in a methodical and calm way. It means we leave the house quietly the following day. We walk up to the bus stop and we welcome the bus to the stop instead of gesticulating at the bus and blaming the bus like it's the bus's fault. It's gone off, keeping to its timetable throughout the day. Maybe we can plan ahead in that way. Do you feel included? It's all said with love. But what happens to us? What happens to us when we think ahead about our worldly wealth? What happens when we start to think ahead about our worldly wealth? Are we thinking ahead about our worldly wealth? Or do we not think ahead at all? If we're not so good at thinking ahead about worldly wealth, come with me to Luke 16 and the parable of the shrewd manager. In this highly unusual story, and it is, we are going to see our big idea for tonight, that Jesus tells disciples to think ahead and use their worldly wealth. Jesus tells disciples to think ahead and use their worldly wealth. Now, by way of context, when we come to the background of our passage for tonight, very little really needs to be said. In Luke 15, the chapter before, Jesus is speaking to a crowd of different people. In the crowd, there are tax collectors, there are sinners, and then there are Pharisees, and there are teachers of the law. So there's a real contrast of people there. Some that admit they're just no good at all, and others who think they're really, really good. They think they know God really well. And in front of them all, Jesus teaches about how we react when we lose something very precious and then we find it again. And we have this lovely build that Jesus gives us. It's like we're going up a set of stairs. First of all, Jesus tells a story about a lost sheep, which is lovely. We heard about sheep this morning. Then Jesus moves on to a lost coin. And then the high point comes as Jesus teaches about the lost son. A beautiful story about forgiveness, about restoration, and about celebration as well. And then we come to our passage for tonight, Luke chapter 16. And there Jesus focuses on the people who put up their hands and say, I follow you, Jesus. I love you, Jesus. Jesus is speaking to his disciples. Yes, the Pharisees are still there. They're listening in very carefully to Jesus. But Jesus' words are now aimed at us, aimed at his followers. So with our context complete, then, let's move off into our first heading. And you'll be amazed to know that tonight, your trainee has just one heading for you. Unusual. One heading for tonight, and it's called this, Thinking Ahead. Thinking Ahead. Now, before we unpack the parable of the shrewd manager, we've got to be honest with each other, haven't we? Because if I said, what do you really think about this parable? Hopefully the polite answer would be, oh, it's a puzzle. And that's what I'm just got to hear. It is a puzzle. This parable makes us scratch our heads and say, what is going on? Because it seems, as we went through the parable, that a reckless manager has just schemed out one last plan at the expense of his boss. But then the boss, who we know has just fired the manager, seems to give the manager the thumbs up about something. And it also seems that Jesus speaks positively about this shrewd manager too. And then Jesus says something, doesn't he, that makes us feel perhaps a little bit awkward in here. Did anybody feel that? I did. It's a scene, perhaps, like we see on the telly with Brian in Confused.com. What is going on here? And when I say Brian in Confused.com, I don't mean our brother. He's in Wiltshire. I mean the robot. You know who I'm talking about, Brian from Confused.com. Somebody nod their heads. Great. Good. So we know about Brian in Confused.com. And maybe this parable has left us scratching our heads. So how will this parable help us tonight? Well, let's start at the beginning of the parable. Let's check out what Jesus is saying to us. Let's begin at verses 1 and 2 together. We read this. Jesus told his disciples there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So a serious accusation. So the boss calls him in and he says to the manager, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management because you cannot be my manager any longer. So right from the very beginning, Jesus is setting a grim mood. A rich boss has a manager who has badly let him down. And perhaps we can illustrate it in this way as we retell this part of the story. Imagine the rich boss is on a comfortable journey in a luxury car. How cars keep coming into these things, I really don't know, but there is no stray cat attached to this car. And then from deep leather seats, this rich man, is watching the glass and the steel and the concrete of Canary Wharf sliding by his windows. And then unexpectedly, the phone in the car rings and a voice fills the car. And as the voice speaks, the boss's cigar is glowing hot white orange. So you get the picture of where this man is at in life. But the atmosphere in the car changes because information received states that his manager, the guy in charge of his estate, has been wasting what he owns. So the boss looks at his driver in the mirror. You know that kind of conversation you have when you don't speak to somebody, they make eyes with each other, and pew, the driver is off, back down into Surrey. Canary Wharf becomes a mansion in the vineyards of North Surrey. Yes, we grow grapes in North Surrey. And that is where the car goes to. And there, the boss interviews the manager in a quiet room with a lamp angled just so and into his face. And the boss says to the manager, is what I hear true? Show me the paperwork that you've been keeping. Show me your accounts. Show me your records. What have you been up to? Because once I know just how bad this all is, you're fired. You're out. You're finished. Well, after the boss has said his bit, and perhaps the manager has got some paperwork together and shown him some of the accounts, the boss leaves. The boss walks out of the room. But we are left with the manager. And for the first time in our story, the manager now speaks. Look at verses 3-4 with me. So here we are listening in on the manager as he has a conversation with himself out loud. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? What shall I do? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So the manager is openly admitting. He's saying that his job for the boss is finished. It's over. He knows he's going to be out on his ear. He knows he's got to sort some paperwork out, and then basically he's going to be homeless. He admits he's not strong enough, or really if we get right under the skin here, what he's really admitting is that life on the estate has been so good, he's just not willing to put some sweat and some graft into manual labor. He doesn't want to do that. When he says he's not strong enough to dig, he just doesn't want to do it. And pride is going to stop him from asking for handouts as well. He's not going to go out into the lanes of Surrey and beg. No way. But after giving us this assessment of his situation, about his future prospects, the manager then thinks out loud again. He starts to think ahead. And he says this, I know what I'll do, so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. In other words, the manager is planning ahead. And that's where this funny word shrewd comes in. That's what is meant by the word shrewd. It means that this man in this context is planning ahead. And the manager is thinking ahead to a future that will be far away from where he is right now. So he gets up, he moves round the table, sits in his boss's chair, adjusts the angle of the lamp to just so, and then he starts to call in the people who owe his boss lots of money. And let's see what happens by reading verses 5 through to 7. So the manager calls in each one of his master's debtors, and he asks the first, how much do you owe my master? 3,000 litres of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 1,500. Then he asked the second, and how much do you owe? Oh, 30 tons of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 24. Well, these verses really do speak for themselves, don't they? We know that the manager has just invented what perhaps we might call today Black Friday. You know that day of amazing discounts, but it just doesn't have the crushing and the fighting that we sometimes see on our tellies. And it's the discounting that the manager is doing that is starting to secure his future away from the boss's mansion. Those who are in serious debt to the boss have been helped by this manager. And the manager knows that when these people he has helped, when they see him out on the lanes of Surrey walking about, looking a little bit sorry for himself and a little bit without a place to live, they're going to make that eye contact across the street. They're going to remember what he's done. And they're going to say, come with us. Come and stay with us. Come and work for us. This manager has made sure that he has got good places to go to after the work for his boss has gone. Now, we hear all this and we think, well, this manager is never going to get away with this a second time. He just can't. But look what happens in verse 8. Look down at verse 8 with me. So the discounting has taken place. And then at verse 8, the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. And when we read that verse, it seems as though the manager has turned it round once again. It's like the manager becomes like a bar of soap at bath time. You know, when you're like, and you just cannot get a grip of this manager or the bar of soap and bring it in. And it makes us feel a little bit tuttery-muttery, doesn't it? It does for me. You know, the manager should have been fired ages ago, kicked off the estate, booted out into the lanes of Surrey, finished with. But Jesus doesn't want us to get tuttery-muttery or pit stop in shop for cookies and milk. Not at this point. Not at this point. Jesus wants us to learn a very specific lesson from this parable. And that specific lesson is this. Are we thinking ahead? Are we thinking ahead? In this parable, it's the principle of thinking ahead that is praised by the boss and is noticed and highlighted by Jesus. But there is something else too, isn't there? Did we notice it? Jesus says that when it comes to us and how we are with each other, perhaps we're not very good at thinking ahead at all. Look at the last part of verse 8 again with me, where we see the word for. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. Apparently, the world is better at thinking ahead and maximizing what it wants with its own kind. And apparently, Christians, that is, the people of the light, that's how Jesus refers to us at this point, the people of the light are not so shrewd when it comes to their own kind. In other words, when it comes to brothers and sisters, we are not so good at thinking ahead. Now, quite rightly, you may be sitting here tonight and scratching your heads again and asking, thinking ahead about what? When it comes to each other, how have we failed? Where has it gone wrong? What is Jesus getting at? Well, we're not left to puzzle for very long, because Jesus now goes on to speak about thinking ahead for each other in the context of worldly wealth. We call this a line of application, or very simply, doing what Jesus wants us to do. And so our first line of application is this: use your worldly wealth for others. Jesus wants us to use our worldly wealth for others. So let's look at verse 9 together. Jesus says, "I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcomed into eternal dwellings." So how does this make us feel? We need to remember that when we see the word wealth at this point, this is not to become a thing where we say and we think in our hearts, well, as I sit here tonight in church, I'm thinking that this is for somebody who is richer than us. This is for somebody who's got more than me. They're more successful. They have more things. So this parable has surely got to be about them. It's not about me. Not when we see this world wealth. It can't be about me. I haven't got very much. But Jesus here is not teaching about quantity or how much we've got. Jesus is telling us to use what we have in a way that shows that we are thinking ahead, and thinking ahead to heaven, thinking ahead to glory, eternity. Jesus says, use what you have, share it with others. You may find friendships growing when you do, so that one day you too might be welcomed into eternal dwellings. So that's right, Jamie. Share the white walls of your home. Don't get snotty when people put their hands on your white walls or kick your white skirting boards, or perhaps slam your white front door just a little bit too hard and crack the white sealer around your white door. Don't get funny about that, you know, because one day, Jamie, your stumpy little life and your white walls and your white skirting board and your white front door, they won't be there anymore. They'll be gone. The things of this world, worldly wealth. Why are you laughing at that stumpy phrase? What's all that about? One day, all those worldly things, all that worldly wealth, it'll be gone, be finished with, taken away. Either me first or the property first. So in our first line of application, Jesus wants us, remember, he's speaking to us, to think ahead, to start thinking about eternity and use worldly wealth, the things that we have, whether it's a lot or a little, and start to use it for others, with others, in service for him. Very often what we have comes down, how we use what we have comes down to who we are. It comes down to where our hearts are in service before him. And Jesus really starts to drive at this as he comes to a second line of application. Our second line of application tonight is this: to show Jesus, always that doing thing, show Jesus you can be trusted with the small things of life. Show Jesus that you can be trusted with the small things of life. Let's look at verses 10 through to 12 together. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? In other words, if we cannot be trusted to think long term about what we have now, Jesus is saying, how can we be trusted at all? Jesus is telling us that our worldly wealth, the things that we have, our car, our homes, the clothes we stand up in, everything that kind of represents us, all of this is in fact really, really small in comparison with heaven. The things we own, our money, our wealth, these things are tiny when compared with the big truth of eternity. So if we can't handle the small things of this life, the worldly wealth of this life, how can we be trusted with the life to come? Either we think ahead and we use what we have to serve God, or we serve our wealth and we end up missing God altogether. As we think ahead, then, show Jesus that we can be trusted with the small things of life. At the end of the parable, at verse 13, Jesus now sums up his teaching at this point. Please look at verse 13 with me as we move to our last line of application. Jesus says this at verse 13, "No one can serve two masters. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." And it's at this point then that we see our last line of application. Number three, devote yourself with love to God, not money. Devote yourself with love to God and not money. In this life then, whether we're young or old, we will either serve God or we will serve money. That's what Jesus is getting us to think about at this point. It is, says Jesus, impossible to treat both equally. Because devotion to one will always mean that the other gets less of our time. It's quite straightforward, isn't it? So where will our loving devotions lie this week? To the Creator or to the created thing? To God Almighty or to bits of metal and paper, also known as money? Devote yourself with love to God, not money. Well, as we conclude, how can we start to summarize for ourselves? You remember at the start of the sermon tonight, we asked a question. Are we good at thinking ahead? And we thought about driving a car with good anticipation. We thought about professional sportsmen and women. We thought about classroom timetables. And then we went on and we studied a really unusual parable that has perhaps made us work hard for our chips tonight. The principle that came out of this parable was this: Jesus wants us to think ahead. And then Jesus applies the parable for us. But he does so in a way that gets really personal and gets right under the skin. Are we using our worldly wealth, what we own, our money, the things we have, are we using these things in a way that shows that we are thinking ahead to heaven, thinking ahead about eternity? Worldly wealth is small in comparison with heaven. Where will our loving devotions be found this week? Right now, we all know what we have. Every one of us in here tonight, whether we're young or old, we all know what we have. We all know what our worldly wealth looks like. It's all relative, but we all know in here what we have. So I ask, how will we use it tonight and into tomorrow and for the week ahead? Now, if we've got a tension in our hearts about this, please look out for Jesus thinking ahead for us. The Apostle Paul explains it in this way as he writes to the church in Corinth. They're familiar words, but I hope they start to bring this together. Paul writes, "For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for our sake he became poor, so that we, through Jesus' poverty, might become rich." In other words, as Jesus thought ahead about our eternal salvation, he gave up everything that he had. He gave up everything that he had and devoted himself in love to us. Jesus exchanged the wealth of heaven for the shame of the cross. Though we were sinners, yet Christ died for our sin. So as we reflect then on the Son of God thinking ahead for us, Jesus is telling us that we too must also think ahead. Specifically, we must think ahead to heaven and use worldly wealth for him. Use what we have for him. Just like the shrewd manager, that puzzle right at the beginning of our sermon, we must be thinking ahead to a future that will be far away from where we are right now. But unlike the shrewd manager who sought to maximize what he wanted in this life and this life alone, we use what we have, we use our worldly wealth in anticipation of the maximum to come. And so, our collective aim as we close tonight must be this: think ahead about worldly wealth. Think ahead to heaven, to future glory. Jesus used everything for us. Amen.